I'm Bill Castle, and this is Free Expression. This program is all about conveying the Christian message from a Catholic point of view and defending the liberty which makes it possible to do that. We talk with creative, interesting people training Catholics to be confident, effective evangelists and helping believers discriminate between truthful information and fake news. Join us. Sit back and enjoy some free expression. Jesus' famous quip about giving to Caesar what is Caesar's conveys an important message about citizenship. Christians are obligated to exercise good judgment when evaluating important questions of law or public welfare. That being the case, information is crucial. We've always depended on the media for at least a basic understanding of current issues, but it's increasingly obvious that the information we're getting too often reflects bias or corporate interest. How can well-meaning Christians evaluate whether news is accurate? At the very least, what are some indicators that the latest media bombshell might not be as factual as news people want us to believe? Then, too, with so much data coming at us these days from so many sources, how can we sort out all the conflicting points and get to something that approaches truth? Rachel Whiteman has applied her analytical and organizational skills as a librarian to helping people identify facts that are reasonably reliable, and she's provided us with a handy guidebook for evaluating media. Faith and Fake News from William B. Erdman's Publishing. Rachel, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What are some of the strategies you suggest for getting to the truth of news reports?
A couple of things I recommend in my book are, first of all, actually a personal thing. I think before we do any checking of a news source or anything like that, it's really important for us to check our emotions. And by that, I mean notice our emotions. So notice how those news stories make us feel. I think sometimes when we are engaging with news or we're online, we can see a lot of news stories that are very emotional. And they want us, you know, the platforms want us to engage with those stories. And if we can pause and notice how we feel, what our emotions are, then that gives us space to decide how we're going to respond. So that's usually my first tip, is actually an internal thing for us just to notice how we're responding internally. And then I think there are a lot of tools we can use to evaluate the news we're seeing. Some are really in-depth things and some are just quick things. I think just little things like doing a Google search on a news story just to see if there's other coverage of that news story can be really helpful. Just to get a more complete picture of what's going on in our world. If we rely only on one news source, we may miss parts of the story. So sometimes just seeing what other news coverage is out there can be really helpful. Another thing I sometimes recommend is just noticing who made, produced, wrote the news story or the content and doing a Google search on them. Are they an expert on the topic? What credentials do they have? That can also be really helpful for us to know who's creating this content, who's putting this out there. Are they an expert on what they're talking about?
Your observation about emotion, I think, is very insightful. We do bring our own emotions, our own expectations, our own point of view to the news. I guess the first thing we have to do is kind of rise above our own preconceived notions.
Yeah, and it can be really hard. You know, it's not something we do naturally to slow down, especially for those of us that get our news online. It can be very fast-paced. We can keep scrolling and scrolling, and taking a pause can feel very counterintuitive.
I've noticed that there are a number of people who are attempting to do something like what you're doing, trying to help people in one way or another sort out the conflicts and discern which news providers are at least somewhat balanced. There's something called the News Literacy Project, for instance. Are you aware of these, and do you trust their perception of the news?
Yes, there are several organizations. The News Literacy Project is one. There's another website called allsides.com that looks at different news media outlets and how they rate politically. And I really like those. A lot of those organizations are doing really good work. I recommend some of them in my book. I recommend them in workshops that I teach. But I usually recommend them as additional tools to help us with that. You know, they are providing us with tools that we can use. Like I said, this allsides.com has a chart that you can kind of look at different news outlets and see maybe a different perspective. And the News Literacy Project, they're doing a lot of education around how to engage with the news. And I think there is a lot of good content out there. And I definitely think that it's worth looking at it and learning from people who study this. The people in these organizations, many of them come from the news media and journalism backgrounds, and they are doing this work because they want to help us all as consumers be better at it and to engage more wisely. Those are two I know of. There are many, many organizations. There are also a lot of nonprofits doing work with like K-12 education and helping with news literacy, media literacy. And so I think those groups are generally, they want us to find truth online, and I think they have a lot of great things to say.
You bring an interesting background to this. It's kind of a mix of experiences. You have one foot in the academic world, but you've also done missionary work. How did all of that point you in this particular direction?
Great question. I became a librarian because I love teaching and I love helping people navigate information. Someone told me once that librarians connect information to people and people to people. And that's what I love. That's what I love about being a librarian. For me, it's about helping connect people to information and each other. And I had the opportunity to be a missionary and a librarian. And so I was doing the same things in Uganda. And I was working in a library. And so in that case, I was helping students often connect to print information in books, but also helping them learn about how to use computers and how to navigate online even then. So even with that work, it was connecting people to information. And I had the opportunity to start teaching classes at my church about how to navigate wisely online. It felt really important for me to help Christians do that well. And so that's kind of, it all kind of came together, the teaching. I also have a background in community development and like growing communities. And so this feels really important for us as a culture to engage wisely. So much of our culture happens online. And so how can we be wise when we're in those spaces?
There's a special need here, I think, among people of faith. It's a tendency for many Christians to kind of, I don't know, how can one put it, to retreat into religious concerns and shut out the world. But I don't think that's really a feasible approach these days when the church and all of us individually as believers face so many challenges. How do you motivate Christians to be more aware, to take the trouble to do the sort of double-checking and research that you're suggesting?
Yeah, that's a really good point and really important. I agree. I think faith communities can kind of say, well, you know, I'm not going to engage with that. It's in the world, and I'm gonna separate out. And it can be really hard. And I think one of the things I try to do in terms of motivating people is just normalize that it can be really overwhelming to sift through the news, the media, the online space. That's normal. I think that normalizing that for people and recognizing that it can be overwhelming is a starting place to know that we're all starting from that point. I'm also really realistic. I come to this work in my book and in my workshops saying that I'm not expecting everyone to check every single little thing they ever read online. I don't think that's realistic. But really, I think it comes back to noticing our emotions. And so what I encourage people to do is not check every little thing, but to notice the things that cause us high emotional reaction and maybe start with those things. You know, it's kind of like that common sense test of like, if it sounds too good to be true, it might be. And so using those kinds of tests, like, oh, this is making me really, really upset. Maybe I should do a little bit of extra checking on this. Or, wow, this seems so great. It must be true. And maybe saying, well, I should check into this a little more to make sure it's not some sort of confirmation bias. And so those are a couple things I do. It is really hard, and I acknowledge that. And so I think acknowledging that it's hard and then starting small and not expecting us all to do everything, that would be unrealistic. And I think as people of faith, some of us feel called to certain topics. And so sometimes I recommend, like, focus on the things that you feel really passionate about, and maybe that's okay. Maybe we don't all have to fact check everything, but if we all fact check some things, hopefully we'll be a lot better off.
Well, how do people find out about your book?
My book is called Faith and Fake News, A Guide to Consuming Information Wisely. It's available on Amazon and the Erdmann's publisher website. I also have a website, which is just racheliwhiteman.com, and that has information about my book and my workshops and some of the work I've been doing.
Right, and you might want to make sure that they understand that Whiteman is spelled W-I-G-H-T-M-A-N.
Correct.
Faith and Fake News by Rachel Whiteman. Thanks very much for being with us. We all face the challenge of figuring out what's true, and it's getting tougher and tougher all the time with developments like deep fake images and artificial intelligence. The advice you're giving is timely and necessary.
Thank you so much for talking with me. I enjoy the opportunity to share about this work and hope everyone finds it helpful.
One of the initiatives that featured prominently during the pontificate of St. John Paul II was his famous New Evangelization. That was a call for Catholics to reach out beyond parish confines, to proclaim the gospel boldly, to invite the world into the church. But in this time when the world has become increasingly hostile to Christian truth, how do you translate those good intentions into an approach, a message, a program that works? Chris Stewart is the Chief Operating Officer of Casting Nets Ministries, a Kansas-based apostolate that equips believers for evangelism. And he's here to tell us about an exciting opportunity for young Catholics who feel called to spread the good news. Chris, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Bill. I appreciate the time.
So what do you have coming up for us this summer?
Well, most of our work is with parishes and with dioceses, but mostly with parishes. I'd probably say 90% of our time is spent with parishes. So during the summer, if you can imagine, most parishes don't do a lot of events and activities, and so it's a really slow time for us. And actually, we were at Benedictine College probably about 9 years ago. We were doing some work there, and the president, President Steve Minnis, said, I really would like to have Casting Nets have a presence on our campus. So one of the first ideas that we came up with was a hole that we kind of saw in ministry in general. And that is, what do we do with high school students that, you know, they've already been to the youth conferences, they've already been to the Steubenvilles, they've already been on the retreats and the March for Life and what have you, and they're in. But what do we do with them next? And so we propose the Casting Nets Institute, or what we would call Transform Your World Evangelization Training Camp, to take those kinds of teens and really turn them outward, turn them into missionary disciples. And so that's this program that we do now every July on the campus of Benedictine College.
Well, young people certainly have the energy and the sense of purpose and all of that, but what do you do with them to actually give them the skills they need to get the word out?
We bring in some other Catholic evangelists, I would say some of the top evangelists in the country. Most of these teens have seen them, you know, at other youth conferences, at World Youth Day, or, you know, they go around and give main event assemblies at high schools. So we brought in Jim Beckman, and we bring in Chris Padgett and Jackie Angel, Sarah Swafford, and we just trained them to be able to do what they do. We train them in prayer, in going deeper in prayer in two ways. So, like, how to go deeper in their own prayer life, but then secondly, how can they actually teach and walk with others in helping them develop a prayer life? Then we train them in what Casting Nets does, which is the seven pillars of effective evangelization. Jackie really runs with them as far as dating relationships. How can we evangelize others in chastity? How can we teach chastity? She also does some stuff with the gifts of the Holy Spirit, being in tune with discernment. Sarah Swofford will actually use a lot of her personality traits, training them how to recognize this in people and share that with them, how to use technology to evangelize both. Again, on a personal level, how can we help, in a very healthy way, use technology? But then how can we use this actually to bring the gospel to others as well? And those are just some of the reflections that they will hear and be trained in. Then they're given, time in groups, obviously, to pray. We have daily mass. We have time for adoration, confession. But then also just this building up of one another, this intimacy that they get with one another as well.
So this is going to be held on the campus of Benedictine College, which is in Atchison, Kansas. Everything will be included. I assume they'll be living in college facilities and eating.
They get the college dorms. They get the college cafeteria food. And it's amazing how much they love it. It's so great. I keep in my mind just sitting there going, yeah, Bill, you just wait until you get to college for a couple months, and you won't love this food anymore.
We hear a lot about young people turning away from their faith. You're working with kids who are still in the church. What's your sense of what motivates them, of what keeps them in the church?
I think they got to have some sort of encounter with the Lord. Right, so they have to encounter him, meet him, and that could be some profound thing, like a youth conference, but it could be just some quietness, some experience at their own parish, but they've had some encounter. But then, and to me, this is what the key is that they've been discipled in some way, right? There's some relationship in their life, whether it be a youth minister, a priest, maybe, their parents, in which they have walked with them. I think this is what is key to healthy Christianity, is that we have to realize that we have to walk with one another in this process. Jesus calls each of us to be saints and to be holy, but he's not calling us to do it by ourselves, to be a Rambo, even though the young people probably don't even know who Rambo is anymore. But, we don't have to fight this battle alone. In fact, he's calling us to fight it together, with locked arms, walking together. And I see that in these teens, either they've had that experience or they are truly longing for it. And this camp sometimes, many times, provide that in a huge way for them.
At the same time, all of the cards of society seem to be stacked against them. There are pressures that young people are facing now that are really incredibly negative and harmful. You have to fortify them somehow against that.
Yeah, I would actually say everything in our culture is working against that exact experience. Our technologies, as Pope Benedict had this great line, he said, technology today gives us an illusion of closeness. It gives us the feel that we are close because I know what you had for lunch today. But knowing what you had for lunch today and actually having lunch with you are two radically different things.
Right.
And so it actually gives us this illusion of closeness while never getting the intimacy that we actually long for. It replaces having huge numbers of acquaintances with having real life-changing friendships where you can hold each other accountable. So everything that I was sharing about what these teens really need, this technology is giving us a pressure to actually undo all of that. And by the way, that's not just simply, for young people, right? I mean, this is also detrimental to every adult and everywhere. It doesn't matter, what you're going through life. There is these pressures that continue to separate us, divide us. Even our parishes, our parish life just is not the close-knit community that some people remember back when they were growing up, or like you read Acts the Apostles, because we're all too busy. Right, we just come to the church, we have our sacraments, and then we leave. But that's not how Christians are really formed and strengthened to go back out into the world. We need each other. And technology and business continues to give pressures that just make that more difficult and more difficult.
Well, tell us a little bit about your parish work. When you go into a local church, what do you offer?
We offer kind of a two-prong attack, if you will. We'll come in and do an evangelization training for like leaders of the parish. And when we say leaders, that, you know, can be parish staff, but it's also, you know, people who are catechists, who are, you know, heads of ministry. It's just people of influence. So we come in, we'll do a day and a half evangelization training. And then I was a teacher for 13 years. So you know that whenever you teach a lesson, you then have to give a homework assignment to make sure that your students got it. So once we do the evangelization training, we then will come back and do a traditional three-night parish mission, maybe 6 to 8 weeks after. So all those leaders that were there at the training, now they implement what we have taught them to hopefully go out and to fill the church for the parish mission, this three-night parish mission. And we come back and we do that parish mission, and usually most parishes will say, you know, it was the best attended mission we've had, because, again, they had this grunt work, if you will, before it, and then the impact of the mission. But the real beauty is that these people that were at the training, they made that happen. Right. And so they get that taste of what it's like to go out and invite and welcome people to the mission so that they can encounter Christ, so that their heart longs to even do that more in the future. That's what we've been doing since really 2005 is when we started Casting Nets Ministries. And it's been an amazing experience to travel all over the country to be able to do that work for the new evangelization.
Well, if young people are interested in applying to take part in this evangelization training camp, what can they do? Where can they go?
They can go to actually two different places, but the main website is castingnetsinstitute.com, castingnetsinstitute.com. You could just, you know, Google Transform Your World Evangelization Training Camp. You could also go to castingnetsministries.com. There's videos there from the speakers telling about the camp, and then there's an application process. Because, again, you know, we're looking for these teens that have already committed themselves to the faith. We're not looking for perfect teens, right? We're not looking for canonized saints. There are no perfect teens, just like there are no perfect adults. But we're looking for teens that have already committed and just said, this is who I want to be. I want to be able to share this with others. That's the requirement that we want. I know the application process, many times, you know, we ask for referrals, and this is not like any other camp where you just sign up and send your money in and you're good to go. We actually do follow up on those referrals to make sure that these are the teens that are ready for this camp. There's no, like, academic. I'm not asking you for your GPA and or, you know, have you read the catechism? How many times have you read the Bible? I'm not asking any of those questions. We have kids that are homeschooled. We have kids from Catholic school, from public school. We have kids that have come from, I think we're up to like 38 different states. So they're all over. In the first 8 years, they're from all over. But the only requirement that I'm really just desiring is that they want the faith for themselves and they want to be able to share it. And I also say this too, that the camp costs $5.95. For many of them, they also have to fly in. We pick them up at Kansas City's airport and bring them over to campus, which is about 45 minutes. But I always tell every teen for the last 8 years, money will never be the reason why you are not there. If you believe God is calling you to come to this camp and we believe that you're the teen, the caliber that we're looking for, we'll find a way. Money will not be the reason why you're not there.
Oh.
So do not let that. And we'll help you fundraise. We will fundraise ourselves if you need it. There are scholarships available. Money will not be the issue, so don't be afraid of that.
Chris Stewart, Casting Nets Ministries. This sounds like a wonderful experience for young people. I would imagine that just the very experience of being together with other motivated teens has to have an impact on lives.
You know, Bill, that's a phenomenal insight that we thought would happen, but has become one of the biggest impacts we have actually seen. When we first started doing this, we thought we're going to always keep this camp small, maybe like no more than like 500 people. And then the first year we did it, we had like 50 teens there. And we're like, yeah, this would never work with 500. We got to keep this small, like no more than maybe like no more than 250. And then we did it again. And these teens, they do have this impact of each other. That many of them, right, these are your, many of these are kids. They're the rock star at your youth group, right? They're rock star at your parish. When I call these referrals, many times I hear things like, "This is one of the greatest teens I've ever known." I hear that all the time. And so when they come and they see other teens that are on fire for Jesus like them, they realize they're not alone. And so many of them, they will still stay in contact. We have kids from our first camp from 2014 that are still friends, that are still, I mean, they're married and having children, and they're still in contact with one another. And we realized that even 100 was too many. So we actually will not take any more than 60 teens from across the country. Hmm. That's it. That's our cap, because we wanted to continue to be able to have that intimacy and that connection with one another. And this year, I'm also really excited about it. I've personally had children go to the camp before, but this year we're going to have a unique experience that myself, I'll have a son there. Tony Brandt, the other co-founder of Casting Nets, he's going to have a daughter there.
Wow.
Jim Beckman is going to have a son there. Sarah Swafford is going to have two sons there. And then I believe Chris Pageant might also have, I believe it's a son there as well. So there's going to be speaker's children there as well, so that's going to be a unique experience for this summer.
Well, this does sound like a unique experience, and for a kid who has the motivation and has the unique character that you're describing, it has to be a life-changing experience, I would imagine.
It's life-changing, and we tell them, you can only come to this once. You come once, and especially on that last day where they're kind of sad that they have to say goodbye to all their newfound friends, say, look, we've done our job, now it's your turn. Right, we have trained you, so now you have to go out and to evangelize and to create that missionary disciple that will be ready for this camp next year. But you can't come back. But it is life-changing. Again, like I said, many of these teens I still stay in contact with, still work with. You know, when we travel parts of the country, they'll show up to our mission. I've been in youth ministry in some way since I was 20 years old. So we're just going to call it, Bill, we're just going to call it over 20 years. And I have never seen anything like this, the impact that it has and what it's doing to the experience that these teens are having.
Casting Nets Ministries, Chris Stewart, thanks for being with us. This is an interesting thing. It should blossom into some very profound effects throughout the parishes, throughout the country.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate the time and getting the word out. God bless you and have a great Easter season.
Be with us next time when we explore other aspects of religious communication and look deeper into the great Christian heritage of free expression. Free Expression with Bill Castle is a production of Good Shepherd Catholic Radio and Company Publications, where good books, good music, and good radio are always good company. Dan Kuras provided technical assistance. Theme and incidental music are by Dan Adam. The program was produced and directed by Bill Castle. This is Good Shepherd Catholic Radio.